Welcome.
Hello.
You know, they should be talking about training.
They should be talking about training. They are talking about training. Actually, we're going to be talking about training today. This question, actually, this topic stems from stuff that happens in a class that we teach called Fuel Transfers. So If you're going to do training, what kind of training should you do?
You should do the best. None other than the best. You should get the best delivery experience, not just some plain old training. You want engaging, hands-on, and not boring. So that's why we all partner up with the training trends, companies, products.
Yep, we bring the very best to every single. We bring the very best to every single classroom. We make sure the courses are up to date. We make sure everything is on the level as we like to be.
Yes. So don't miss your opportunity to improve your team's capabilities. Go to thehazmatguys.com/hire us and reserve your spot and start your transformation today. I love that. Start your transformation. So motivational. Tony Robbins-ish.
Oh, see, now I think Transformers. Like,
That works. Well, you know, as of this recording, I think in only 2 days, we're going to be doing the third of the After Action Report podcasts with Phil McArdle. But I'm letting you know about the fourth one that I just sent the invite out. Hopefully he says yes to it. Ooh. Is Greg Knoll.
Ooh, kind of a big name in the hazmat world, that's for sure.
Yeah, that one will be on April 3rd, 2024, 19:30 hours Eastern Standard Time. Again, long form, comments are on Facebook and YouTube, free. Throw your comments, ask him the questions. It should be really cool.
Yes, and if you have any pictures or stories of Greg Knoll, please send them our way before the show, because we would love to bombard somebody with stuff that they're not expecting.
Absolutely. As far as our conferences, still coming up, New England Conference is coming up soon, March 26th, OMRA, Michigan, Cold Zone, South Carolina, Oklahoma, Oregon, Baltimore. That takes us up to June. So,
and that's a lot. We're everywhere this year.
Going good, man. Getting ready to go to Wammer. As of this recording, next day, Wednesday.
We're getting ready to start a whole series of battery classes out west. Mm-hmm. So west for us, east if you're in California.
I guess, yeah.
We'll give any specifics, but we'll start with that. So how's everything going in Bobland?
Very good. I'm excited to talk about this. This is a topic that we've talked about a bunch of times, not only in conferences and in classes, but in real life. I mean, like, you know, you know what the funny thing is that a lot of places that we've done the whole fuel transfers are like, we don't do that. We just, you know, we plug and patch and we put things in. And the reason that it is such a basic operation, I will say, in New York City, is because we have an exceptional amount of idiots.
Yes. Well, I think it's idiot density. Right. It's like you have so many idiots per square mile of city. We get this. I remember when we first, you know, came up with the idea of fuel transfers. Actually, it was Bob's idea to come up with the topic of fuel transfers. And I remember sitting there going, that's so basic. Who the hell is going to come listen to us talk about fuel transfers? And Bob was like, you'll be surprised. Like, let's see how it goes. And the first four conferences we did packed the room. And I was like, why the hell are these people sitting here talking about like the most mundane operation? And it turns out that not a lot of people are doing them.
No,
but a lot of people want to do them.
Well, all right. So, and you might be saying, all right, I said that we have an exceptional amount of idiots, and I'm not talking about solely in the fire department, but I'm saying in the city. So what would happen would there was a leak, we would plug and patch, or we'd, you know, put a golf tee or whatever the hell it was, and we'd say, you have to bring your car to the shop. And the guy's like, no problem. And as soon as the taillights went around the corner, he would jump in his Volvo and go off to do his tennis lessons. And he would then have a 15-mile-long leak of gasoline throughout the city that now we had to address. Right. And so we said the best action is just to take the gas out of the car, ruin the tank in the process, because the tank is already ruined because it has a leak, hole in it. And then we would just hand him back the fuel and we'd say, now you're going to fix it.
Right.
And he wouldn't have an option of going to Tennis.
Because the tow truck driver would tow the vehicle to a shop. Mm-hmm. They would take the gas with them. And all of those operations are completely legitimate, right? Like, it's not like we're putting, a 55 gallon, or not a 55, but like a 16 gallon drum of fuel in the vehicle with the guy and being like, you drive it to there. Like, we're passing the responsibility on the proper way. And as people, I guess, started hearing about this, it became a very popular topic. It's actually a topic that we developed because of it, a 4 and an 8 hour course for. We get a tremendous amount of traction with going and teaching departments how to do this. We actually do a pretty decent amount of consultation stuff where people are like, hey, can we get like an hour of your time? Let's go through the operation. We want to know what equipment to buy, what pumps to buy. So this is, I was completely wrong, Bob. This was a topic that definitely took off. So when we're teaching the classes, these are some common things that we see people not do or not even think to do. And these are all safety tips or tricks of the trade. Most of them are safety tips, one or two tricks of the trade. That we've developed just by doing it over and over again. And yes, sometimes these stem from fire department mistakes that we have actually seen happen in person. So,
yes.
I'm going to
throw on here. We're probably going to get to 6 in a regular show, but I have an extra one at the end that I just thought of. I'm going to write it down on our little show notes here. There you go. So, We'll get to the couple of bonus ones in the premium section. So if you're a premium member, you're going to see that. By all means, jump in there. So let's start with safety tip number one, because so obviously, because the vast majority of them are gasoline, which means the flammable range is just about everywhere ready to go, because you have to get colder than, what is it, minus 43? Fahrenheit?
Yep.
Something like that. It has to be hella cold, right? In order for it not to be ready. Now, diesel, another story. Everybody understands that. But the thing is that if you have the potential for creating a fireball, then you have to remove all possibilities of ignition.
Of said fireball.
Of said fireball, right? So at that point, so if you obviously you can't use electric pumps. Because electric pumps use little rotors in it, and the brushes create sparks. Even in brushless ones, there's always the possibility of it. Or, and this is one of those things that we've had many discussions under, is that static electricity can grow based upon movement of fluid.
Yeah.
But the two main pieces of equipment that might fall under this is the drill or the pump. Right,
because so how do you have a drill if you're not having an electric drill?
Because you're gonna have pneumatic drills.
Ooh,
yeah. So they make them, and I'll give you a little pro tip there. I would say if you're going to get a pneumatic drill, get 2 to 3 of them, because it's not a one thing only where you're gonna get one hole sore. When you're up on top of, let's say, a tractor trailer and everybody's watching, you're going to snap the pilot bit. And so it's incredibly embarrassing to have to swap out the pilot bit on top of a truck. You just throw this drill down and they throw you a new one up as they fix it downstairs.
Yeah. It allows that kind of operation to keep going. And,
yeah.
But that happens with the drills and the pilot bits with the gas containers, generally not with Absolutely. Plastic, right? But we get metal gas containers, and I've broken off bits while laying underneath the car, and if you don't have that second swap out, then you're just laying in, it's always the middle of August, it's 95 degrees in the atmosphere, the street is 432 degrees Fahrenheit, and you're sizzling, laying waiting for this thing to be done out. And as we have it for air for the drills, we also have the pumps. Super important. Now, we have seen firefighters light themselves up using electric drills.
Yes.
Yeah. So that is a real thing.
They went lazy. And I know the guys that did it, and they went lazy and they used a regular like DeWalt drill. And if you've ever used a DeWalt drill, when you hit the brake, let go of the thing, there's sparks and stuff that fall out. Well, they've gotten away with it many times because they were in above the UEL. But there was a slight breeze that day, and that UEL got shifted a little bit, and they were right in that right spot, and it flashed.
And it flashed. And that's a key point, right? Is the flash, right? We talk about, sometimes we think about gasoline and we think about the liquid. But the ignition temperature is a different thing than the flash temperature. And you can flash at a much lower temperature than your ignition temperature. So when we're looking at these things, remember, we're looking at flashes, because flashes can do a tremendous amount of damage as well. And although I've never seen an electric pump get used, mainly because we don't have any electric pumps, I have seen, responded once to an incident. They were trying to steal gas in Staten Island. And what they would do is they would park a van over the gas hole. They would remove the cover. They had a hole in their van. They would remove the cover, and then they would try to pump out the gas into tanks in the van, and they used an electric rotary pump. And there was not a whole hell of a lot left to see after that sparked and flashed during that operation. So I can definitely tell you without a shadow of a doubt, make sure you're using a regular air actuated pump as well. And we can have a conversation about pumps later, but you know.
Yeah, I think I know, because I'm thinking as if I was the loyal listener, it sounds like a risky thing. It sounds like, why would I do this? And okay, we can make the argument that you're going to have to take the idiot factor out. But the thing is that if you use a pneumatic drill and you use a pneumatic pump,
right?
I will say, statistically speaking, and I can say only from New York City's point of view, we have never, ever blown up when we were doing the right thing.
Right. It never has ignited. It never lit up. Even there was this whole theory with the pumps that we used that we were going to like fill the area with vapor, and that vapor was going to flash in the source of ignition, blah, blah, blah. And this, I think, was mainly because you can smell gasoline at such low parts per million, right? That smell is so strong, and yet it takes so much more than that smell to light up, that when we tried to recreate this theoretical situation, we never got anything to ignite or light or even come close to it. But we still take these precautions, because if something does go wrong, why not be fully ready? Because that's emergency service, right? Like, you can do something 1,000 times and for some unknown reason, time number 1,001, it lights up and there's a problem. Right. So you keep that in mind, right? We want to have, what do we want to wear?
Well, that goes with complacency. There was a guy, he always, it didn't matter if it was an EMS or wires down or an auto accident. The guy got dressed like he was going into the worst flashover that was ever created.
To the nine.
John McCoy would always get geared up. I mean, the exact same way. And he was the epitome of not being complacent. And when you're doing these things, and it's 105 degrees out, you're going to want to do it in t-shirts and flip-flops. And the problem is that 1,001th time, it's going to flash on you. So you have to be, it's not like you're going into a fire, right? Where you can have a little bit exposed ear or something like that.
Yeah, when you get some warning.
Yeah, when you're in an atmosphere that's flammable, everything in that atmosphere is flammable. It's going to hit you on the cheeks and underneath the chin and on the top, everywhere simultaneously.
Yeah. And a flash like that, it's over before you even realize it began.
Right.
So there's no, I'm going to move. Right. You're just like, it's it's almost like a, what the hell just happened? Wait, why don't I have eyelashes or eyebrows, you know, type of a situation. It happens so fast. So yeah, man, fully buttoned up. However you would want to be in, you know, for a flash, that's what you want to do. Now, along with the idea of that flash, and this is I'm going to say this very particularly. So guys, listen, a charged hose line with a fog tip on it, probably at about 35, 45 degrees as a safety. Okay. This is important. It has to be charged. It has to be charged. It has to be manned. It has to be ready to go. And on top of that, not only is it there, not only is it ready to go, but you as the entry guy should walk over to the nozzle man and have a conversation with that nozzle man. Mm-hmm. Why should you have that conversation with the nozzle man? Because they don't know what you're doing. They are not hazmat techs. They are a what we would lovingly refer to as a G-pop engine company who is standing there with a hose line, being told to stand there with a hose line, not really having much idea what's going to happen. So you as the entry guy should walk over. That guy is going to be saving your life if something happens. At least say hello. Right. This is what we're going to be doing. This is what could happen. This is what I want you to do. It could be a
Well, you know, and even saying to the guy, hey, listen, if something goes sideways, I want you to give me a short burst. Not I don't want you to splash the gasoline down the street and make an enormous problem.
Right. And don't push me under the car with the hose stream.
Right. Yeah. You're not rolling me down the street with this thing. So, you know, again, it's good because it's there to protect the guys working. And I understand, you know, somebody might shortcut and go, well, I got a 2.5 gallon water can or I got a dry chem. No, a charged hose line. Putting those other things on top of that, even from a different angle, I'm OK with that.
Right.
But you got to have the charge on hose line.
Right. Because what's the goal of the charge hose line?
To protect
you to protect under the car.
The guy.
Right.
Yeah.
So
plus he owes you money.
Yeah. Well, or you owe him tours. but think about it, right? Like, they want to do an extinguisher. And this is something that can be important as a technician, right? Like, people are going to do something. And before you do anything, you should be looking around, right? Like, as the entry guy, before I crawled under the car, I was always like, is there a charge hose? Like, okay, good. That's there. Because if somebody just walked up with a PW can, I'd be like, no, I can't do that. Like, that is not going to protect me from an ignition. There's not enough oomph, and it's not going to cool me down at the same time, right? I need something that's going to push the flames away from me, keep me cool at the same time, while allowing people to pull me out from under the car without being bombarded by hose lines. So, you know, it's a conversation that should definitely be had.
Love it.
All right. Next, you want to isolate the runoff prior to engaging in the vehicle. And what do I mean by that? Well, this car is leaking gas. The car could have a couple of drops and then you got nothing to worry about. But if you have a significant leak where it has started to run down the street, we have to remember that any point in time in that runoff, you could have a flash situation. So if you're under the car and it flashes and you now have gasoline that has gone into the sewer, you are going to have a trail of fire, not just on you, but from the gasoline into the sewer and down the road. So we want to make sure that we cut that off.
Right. Or even worse, let's say, you know, because everybody in the zone of the car that's leaking is on high alert for ignition points. But that little stream is going down the block and somebody down the block lights it and it comes back to the car.
Ooh. Yeah. You think you're doing everything all safe. You're like, hey, this isn't a big deal. Maybe I won't wear my mask for this one. And all of a sudden you've got a perpetually surprised look on your face the rest of your life.
Right. Like the Botox face, you know, so like, you know, you can't. If you have a puddle, the entire puddle has to be isolated as far as ignitions.
Right. And you could do that with foam, but I would definitely want to have some kind of a fire break, something that's going to prevent, if one part goes on fire, prevent it from jumping over and lighting up.
I like that.
That's going to bring us to number five. Okay. You've got two people on entry. One of those people are under the car, full PPE like we talked about. The other guy, the other entry member, is there getting ready to pull that guy out. Not just standing by, but actually active with their hands on him in a position to actually pull as a reflex.
Yep.
I think
and he should be in full PPE too.
Full PPE as well. Right. The last thing, the last thing you want is for him to reflex up because he doesn't have his mask on protecting his face, and now you're just kind of left sizzling under the car.
Right. You, the second guy pulling the first guy out will be a lot faster than that guy doing the worm backwards.
Yes.
It's going to be a lot faster. So, you know, and I've seen that too, you know, where the guy just needed to get out kind of quickly. We obviously don't have the ability in a audio or even the video podcast to show you the techniques in it. That's, we're going to leave that for the classes and stuff like that. But just, you got to imagine that you're going to be intimate with the bottom of the car for some duration of time, you know, and so with that, you're in a kind of a vulnerable spot as far as the guy that's underneath or even the guys that's stretching lines. So one of them, and number six, we're going to call as, you have to isolate the car from traffic. You know, cars, whether they're parked on the side of the street or in the middle of the street, or they're involved in an accident, they are on a roadway.
Right.
And there is cars that are going to be getting around because they call them rubberneckers or whatever. People are looky-loos at what's going down. What are those guys doing over there? And they're not looking forward. They drive right into a guy's legs that are hanging out from underneath the car, and they just run over a guy's legs.
Yeah. And you may sit there and go, yeah, but that's ridiculous. We block traffic all the time. We isolate all the time. We isolate when we understand we have to operate. A lot of times when companies get on scene for like a car leaking gas, they're just investigating. They're just trying to figure out what's going on. It's not the same mindset as, oh, we have a large operation that's going to happen right here. Let's protect the area. They're generally not looking to block traffic. The rigs are lined up in a line. Everybody's walking over to the car. So, you know, make sure that before you do anything, getting crawling under, that the scene has been set up as if you were performing an extrication in the middle of the highway, which includes chocking the wheels of the car. And this may sound absolutely ridiculous. I think the only time we wouldn't chock the wheels of a car to get out the fuel is if it's a lithium ion battery car, because we're not training. But
there you go.
But this is super important, guys, for a number of reasons. One, depending on the technique that you're going to use to get under the car, you may have to jack it up a little bit. And sometimes if you were to, you know, jack up the wheels that are actually connected to the differential, and now you're going onto the wheels that are not part of the drivetrain, things can start to roll and move around. So make sure you chock those wheels.
Yeah, and we got two more for the premium. So before I go, we forgot to mention this last week. Industrial Emergency Council, IEC, is nonprofit led by experts providing diverse emergency responses training for almost 40 plus years, collaborating with fire departments, public agencies, military and private sectors. Check them out at iectraining.org or call 650-508-9008.